It's the Saturday Supplement. I'm Frank Lewis. These past weeks, the seven-day Brendan pilgrimage starting in Ballyhigh and following the coast all the way, staying where we finished each day, the final day over Brandon, the sense of camaraderie, helping one another, a tiny sample of Brendan's physical prayer from birth to the start of the voyage, which was the great sea saga of medieval Europe. Marking 60 years since the opening of Mucker's House to the public on Kerry Today with Tressa Murphy and Jerry O'Sullivan, trustees, workers from the trustees and the National Park and Wildlife Service all bursting to tell the story how an initiative by an individual backed by the people of Killarney in partnership with the state is a never-ending source of local pride and attracts over 2 million people every year. A different angle on this programme at the end of July. Storied Kerry Turin Cahill, over 200 people in a marquee launching their book on the story of the 500 to 600 acre Barna Bog that for 30 years employed several hundred. All told in a new publication and a film, the Turin Cahill Appetite, for their own story, all tempered with good music and humour. More about that at the end of August. Today, marking a Stone Age moonrise in Bunnan, where the interest in their local story has enriched life for everybody, their community and their place. We've told the story of archaeological sites here in Bunnan aligning with the sun at key times of the year, and today marking a unique alignment of the full moon that happens only once in 18.6 years. But this year, a phenomenon of once in, we've been trying to work it out, is it 365 years? I don't know. Happening on the June the 21st, Midsummer's Day, the longest day of the year. All of this is special, happening in a special place. But most special of all, because it was entirely brought about by the people of Bunnan. Danny O'Connor's curiosity on the Thursday, December the 15th, 1999, the last sunrise of the millennium, the last sunrise of the century. And all of that taken on board by the Bunnan community. So how did all of this affect the lives of the people of Bunnan and their place against the background of the alignments? That is the story we'll tell over the next 2 hours, guided by Danny O'Connor, with Stephen O'Sullivan, Pat O'Sullivan, Brendan O'Sullivan and Sean O'Sullivan. They're not all brothers. As well, Bunnan song with Brianna O'Sullivan and Sophie O'Shea, and music from Damien Barry, Nick Irwin and Mary Donegan. Today's programme is recorded on June the 17th and hopefully at 11:30 on June the 21st, witnessing the rising of the Stone Age full moon. For future programmes, your story on archaeological site alignments or on the effect on you of your involvement in an aspect of the story of your own place, or your story on Bunnan, write Frank Lewis, Killon Mangerton Road, Muckross, Killarney. Email franklewismangerton@gmail.com. You can text 083 300 3300 or phone 066 712366. And so, to begin, in this telling archaeoastronomy of the Bunnan Stone Age moonrise in the Bunnan Heritage Park, in the stone circle, looking up at the altar of the moon. Stevie, the altar of the moon is what it's known as locally.
Daniel's discovery, and he's thinking that it might have aligned with the midwinter sunrise. We discovered then that that wasn't the case, so with thanks to computer technology and software, we were able to figure out that it was the moon that was rising there, and it's most certainly rising.
How does the computer tell you that?
A program called Stellarium. You can put in any date when the moon or whatever.
And you can get the alignment?
You can get the alignment, yeah. You'll have to have your horizon, degree of your horizon, which is 4 degrees here where the altar is, the degree from north, and then it will show you exactly where the moon or sun or stars came up at that time.
Did that tell you when this was constructed or how all this started?
Because of a thing called precession.
What's that?
Precession is where the world is turning every day in an axis. The world is also tilting in another axis, and that takes roughly 26,000 years to complete. The effect of that have, if you were looking at the sunrise today, for example, that will be roughly a 1 or 1.5 degrees to the left of where it was back 5,000 years ago. The same with the moon. The best alignment there, when you go into the real nitty-gritty, would be around, again, 3,400 BC in my calculations.
What's that telling you?
That the moon rose right behind the altar, and then the angle of the mountain and the angle of the moonrise corresponds to give a sense that the moon is climbing up along the side of the mountain, and the full disk of the moon then will show on top of the mountain.
So this is a further example of this stone circle we're standing in, was obviously designed very carefully to meet all of these needs.
Oh yeah, and I would think, just looking at where we're standing, that this ground was trunked up really, where the stone circle, that would be my belief.
Yeah. Stephen, did the effect of the interest in archaeological alignments with the sun and the moon, have you a story that shows the effect this had on your wife?
In fairness, Frances is very interested. You'd make a discovery, or I might wake her up to tell her, you know, because I do my research probably when I finish work at 11, 12, 1 o'clock at night.
So it's an archaeological site instead of going to bed with your wife. Well, we all have our kids.
It was a good job. That was 1999. Our last child was conceived at that time. Is that a coincidence or not?
Nothing happened after that. Danny, when you rushed in home that morning and told your wife Myra to put on her coat, that you were rushing down to see the rising moon in the stone circle, a stone circle that you hadn't seen for 30 years, Myra thought she should call for the men with the white coats.
She wasn't too enthusiastic, I must admit, but she should have to blame her.
This is on a frosty morning now. You brought her up here on the 15th of December of 1999.
Yeah, Thursday morning.
And she stayed with you?
She did, of course. I had the keys of the car.
Pat, your poor wife.
No, I have no romantic story that could compete with Denny bringing Myra up through the forest on a cold.
Or even Stevie's coincidence, like you didn't stop going to bed.
I'm still good for 11 o'clock.
So she hasn't had a reason to react.
I think she's still happy enough, yeah. But no, she Tina has over the years seen the enthusiasm that I suppose we've all displayed on various times. She's support of the various
but is it
events.
All a male thing? Are there no female enthusiasts?
There are, yeah. And we have on our committee we have Denise and Fiona and Irene and Sheila. Of course, Sheila is a long term member of the committee. So no, we're pretty much 50-50 on it. We're very, very gender balanced in our committee. So yeah. It's just to send us out to do the digging and the turning. So
far away in Cork, did this happening have that kind of effect on your poor wife?
No, she just thought it was another one of my madcap ideas initially, so I'm always up to something or other, so it didn't affect her at that stage very much, really.
No, at all,
yeah.
Stevie, was there something in Danny's archaeoastronomy interest that sparked off something in you?
When we began researching, and then Danny talked about the butter rolls, and as we call it, the rolls of butter, and that always fascinated me. What that was all about? Multiple Bolan stone. That was probably in the year 2000, on the midwinter sun, and standing at the Bolan stone again, the sun appeared at the bottom of the nearby hill and climbed up along the side of the mountain, and right on the top of the mountain again, the full disc showed. Yeah. And then as we researched the mountain, which we can see from here, the Bolan stone and the stone circle are in exactly one alignment.
Even reflecting on the gender balance there, which is great. I forgot to mention Karina, of course. She'd never forgive me if I did.
Yeah.
It's a great committee. Work very, very hard.
We're going to move on. Well, we're probably not going to move on, but we'll move to another section.
Mid scenes remembered far and wide by the winding banks of Sheen.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Virgin Media, Ireland's best broadband. Visit virginmedia.ie. It's playtime.
Scenes remembered far and wide by the winding banks.
We're now
of
at the Rolls of Butter archaeological site in Bonan. We're just beside the Sheen Valley's best known archaeological site. Stephen, describe what we're looking at.
What we have here is a multiple Bolan stone. Bolan stone is a stone with one or several Bolans or wells drilled in its surface. And here we have, in each Bolan, or in some of the Bolans, you can have this oval-shaped stone. But what we have here is a rock of roughly 6 foot square with seven Bolans or wells drilled in its surface. And in each Bolan is one of these oval-shaped stones. And in the middle, we have a quern stone with another one of these oval-shaped stones standing in the middle. The Bolans are wells of different depths in the rock. the stone itself is square, and the corners of the stone are facing the cardinal points. There's many legends and myths associated with the Boulogne stone. Apparently, Saint Fiacne, our local saint, came upon a woman making butter here one day. I think it was happened to be on May Day, which was a holy day. So she was working on a holy day. Plus the fact she had stolen the milk from her neighbour. So she had doubly sinned. And she was making the butter here, and Saint Fiacne obviously got very annoyed with her. So he turned the butter into stone. And in the middle then, that's been to be the top of the churn and the dasher handle. The woman fled, ran down here across the valley, down over. And St. Fiacne followed her and also turned her into stone. And she can be seen over here to the day as a tall standing stone here across the valley.
You were looking at the Discovery Channel.
If you're standing here on the 21st of December, the winter solstice, the sun rises here. We're looking up here at a conical shaped mountain. The sun rises here on the left hand side, and the angle of the mountain and the angle of the sunrise at that time of year corresponds, again to give the sense that the sun is rolling up the side of the mountain. Mm-hmm. And the full disc of the sun then appears at the top of the mountain, and the top of the mountain, the Boulogne stone and the stone circle we've just left, they are all in one exact alignment. Having that discovered, I was watching a program on the Discovery Channel one night in connection with the pyramids in Egypt, and they were explaining how the pyramids were built as a ground image of the stars on the Orion belt. And while I was watching the program, I looked and I thought of these three stones here on the left.
The deepest
of the stones.
Yeah.
And it occurred to me that they might represent Orion's belt. So I, again, on a frosty night, I came up here to see, and I was looking, and just over here on the left, the minute I looked, I could see the correlation of the stars and the match on the ground here with the Boulogne. It's the stars on the bottom half of the constellation of Orion and two associated stars. In Egyptian mythology, this would represent the sun god Horus. He was seen as the sun crossing the sky at night, and then he was seen as a bird. You can see the shape of the bird at night time crossing the sky. And it's so exact that the deeper wells represent the brighter stars.
So all of the stones here, all of the Boulogne's are reflecting.
Are reflecting exactly what you see in the sky.
There was an old tradition here that you could use these stones to curse somebody. They say turning the stones against someone, and you had to turn them in the Thuhil direction, which is anti-clockwise. And there was one overriding thing here, is that if the curse wasn't warranted, it came back on the person who issued the curse. Another interesting point there is that while this is probably an ancient druidical site, with the coming of Christianity, it was Christianized, in a sense.
Yeah.
And there was rounds paid here in the graveyard. The graveyard is probably certainly going back to the early days of Christianity. But there was also a round done here for the cure of warts. And locally, this stone was known as Clochnavahini, or the Rock of the Warts. You had to walk around here, again in the Thuhil direction, and you had to say an Our Father at each one of the Boulogne stones, and you rubbed the Boulogne stones to the wart, and that was allegedly a cure for...
Did it cure your warts?
I never tried it. I never had warts, fortunately.
There's another Boulogne stone just there, near that oak tree there, and this is the road we came up here. It's tucked in there under the ditch, but... It may have been disturbed or moved. You can't see it, just a tiny bit showing up, but put in your hand, it's as round as that one there. But it may have been moved or half concealed when they were making the road there.
The man who owned the land here, Christy Palmer, told me that allegedly it was the holy water font from the old church there.
Difference in activities, Pat, between your youth and your children's youth?
Certainly the influence of the park and what we're done in the parish over the last number of years associated with the archaeological finds. The school children, the National School, each child gets the opportunity to plant a tree and attach their name to it in the park as each class comes along. And that gives the opportunity for the children to feel part of it. And it sparks that little bit of interest. The park is there. Then if they're in the park, the monuments, what are they? That whole conversation takes place. The activities, we're still fortunate. We have a good, strong tradition of football and hurling in the school. So that's still continuing. And I'd like to think we're adding a dimension in there that perhaps we didn't have. But that being said, what we had were the stories. Quite often they might have been used to frighten the children to bed early or whatever, but the myth and the stories, and it's great when you can link up that to grains
and
from
is
the past.
That happening? Is the myth and story now
that's
being...
continuing. We make sure that continues, and it continues within the school as well. You know, those stories are continued. They draw pictures of the local river, the River Sheen, would be associated with O'Sheen.
I'd be very encouraged because just about a year ago we had some celebration back in Molly Gallivan's, and my grandnieces and nephews were there, my daughters and that, and I was purely blown away. You met, of course, Brianna was singing there earlier. They had so many songs, the older songs, and they sang them and they were telling stories.
It's interesting how some of the old legends were Christianized. The story of the patron saint of the parish here, Saint Fachan, is quite an interesting one. According to the story, he came from Caolca, which is just across the mountain there, and he was one of triplets. Now, there was already 15 or 16 children in the family.
Nice
and
family,
the father wasn't too keen, and the two more, so he decided he'd drown them, and he put them into some kind of a bag or something, and he was going to the river to do just that. But I think his explanation that he was going drowning pups was shattered when there was a bit of crying from the bag. So one of the neighbours took them and found a foster home for them. They grew up to be fine young men, and they all went on to sainthood, and they were named Fichtna, Lechna and Conn. It's quite easy now to see how that ties in with the biblical story of Moses being left in the bulrushes. So I think maybe there was a bit of Christian legend and ancient legend were mixed up together in the whole thing, and there'd be several more examples that were on the parish of that kind of, and all over the country for that matter.
And we're beginning to experience another aspect of the story of Banan. The midges are out.
To follow on from what Pat said there, how the kids are picking up on the archaeology of the parish. We don't really realise it, but we're so lucky to have our school, because they're living within it all, and they can see the same sun coming up different places. But if they were inside in Kenmare, like, they were almost forced to go in.
But is the school here actively promoting the local story and the local dimensions of the local story? Because in so many places they're taught about the Himalayas, but they don't know about the Reeks or the Cahas or whatever, you know.
They were singing at a summer solstice sunrise there. Was it in 13?
And I think the school, just quite recently, done a recording of a local song, Buck from Banan.
And now Banan musicians Damien DeBarra on Bowron, Nick Irwin on Bazooki, and Mary Donegan on Tin Whistle with two jigs, The Bluebells Are Blooming and The Grassy Road.
Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Virgin Media, Ireland's best broadband. Visit virginmedia.ie. It's playtime.
The Saturday Supplement with Frank Lewis on Radio Kerry.
Mid scenes remembered far and wide by the winding banks.
Emphasising the uniqueness of the sun and moon alignments discovered in the Bannon Heritage Park, today's programme was recorded on June the 17th. Your comments on a particular archaeological site, archaeoastronomy, or Bannon for future programmes, text 083 300 3300 or 4066 712 3666. Now, the major standstill of the moon on June the 21st, 2024, just this month. Pat O'Sullivan, why is this phenomenon called the major standstill of the moon?
It's an 18.6 year cycle, as when the tilt of the moon and the tilt of the earth are at their max. So it appears to move along, which of course that's from our position when we look at it in the horizon, it appears to move along, and this is the most extreme either southerly or northerly point that the moon will set or rise at. That's how it's called, the major standstill of the moon. That's your max it'll go because of the tilt of both the earth and the moon. This is unique here this this particular weekend, because we'll have a full moon. We'll sit over that altar stone there, and we're expecting a fine display. The proof of this, that our ancestors would have positioned the stone circle and those rocks to reflect that.
As we were talking beforehand, and I speculated at the beginning of the programme about 365 years, but it's probably much, much longer, this kind of phenomenon. It's probably something of thousands of years.
I attempted to find the answer to that before the programme, Frank, and failed. Now, yeah. There might be somebody out there who can tell us, and we'd be delighted. The full moon is the significant bit on this particular standstill on the 21st of June, yeah. When you have the sunrise, and we'll be here. It's an event we do every year, 6:30 here, and we've got 50 or 60 people here. There's a great connection here to the past when you do something like this, and you have to think of, right, 5,000 years ago, these people, and they didn't just get up one morning and decide to place stones in this particular location. There would have been generations of research, and many of the stone circles that would have been excavated, they found post holes. In other words, they would have been experimenting, is this the right position to reflect the sunrise at the appropriate time of year? So this would have taken generations. And we sometimes think of our ancestors 5,000 years ago and being a bit backwards. What were they at and what are they doing?
They were hugely sophisticated.
And I mean, what you're talking here is, you're talking the Neolithic into the Bronze Age. It's a moving from the hunter-gatherer phase into the farming phase. And I mean, why would they want alignments? Of course they would. It's the time to plant. It's the time to sow. There was a whole piece around, how did the moon impact people? What did they look up at the sky and think about? When you're in Bannon, the sun will rise and shine right through the Fulloch Fia, from the high point on the mountain behind me, right through the Fulloch Fia to the central boulder burial here. That's not by chance.
No. The effect this fascination with archaeoastronomy has had on your children, well, we've heard one view. Are you going to add to that?
Well, at a young age, he was dragged around the place looking at various monuments, whether he liked it or not. But to be fair, he didn't complain too much, and we wouldn't have listened anyway.
It's that general sense in among family and friends that there's an understanding of the uniqueness of what we have here and how special the place is. And
Brendan?
One of my daughters is quite interested in archaeology, and she studied archaeology in first year in college. Deirdre, she's living in Killarney now. She had gained an interest in archaeology from what was going on in the parish here. She didn't take it any further because she subsequently ended up in the nursing profession.
But even as a pastime, even as an activity, a social activity?
Deirdre was still very interested in archaeology and all associated with it. I would imagine she's our youngest daughter, so that was probably reflects what was going on in our lives and in the life of the community here at the time. There's a great sense of the wonder of the place. It's a wonderful place, really. All the monuments here and the beauty of the place, it's an attraction in itself.
Absolutely. Danny, way back in 2003, when you produced an illustrated map of the antiquities of the Sheen River Valley, your daughter Karina and Linda did the drawings of the sites.
Myself and Mara have three. They're definitely interested. I mean, some of them own the land now, and they're amazed, and they show their grandkids where the monuments are, and it goes on and on. Like, you'd have a special interest when there's one of them in your own land, like, too. You'd be watching out for it, that it doesn't get damaged.
There are lots of myths, aren't there, associated with archaeological sites on farmland, but generally they're negative. If you go in there, the fairies will get you or something like that. Whereas the reality is a much more interesting story.
there's myths and folklore with them as well.
Stevie.
My daughter Megan, who is now living in England, she was particularly interested in, we'd have gone to the different sites doing the different research and whatever. So she had a keen interest. So have my other two daughters, Claudia and Carolyn. And I suppose helping with the computer programs and uploading and doing different images and stuff like that. They have good interest, I suppose, like that. They might think we're a bit mad at times, but they appreciate their heritage, which is a great thing.
Absolutely. Pat, archaeoastronomy will continue to produce ever more revelations.
We're lucky here in Monaghan, and somebody mentioned that this forest probably saved the Stone Circle, probably saved the Ring Fort, it saved the Fulloch Fee, in the sense that farming wasn't carried out here for 40 years. So these were untouched, Kilty took over, planted it back in the early 60s. We were aware of a Stone Circle being here in the Ring Fort, but all the other items we weren't, of course. It was only when we went into the space of examining it and getting, and Niall Gregory, the archaeologist, give us the assistance there to identify the monuments and say, yeah, absolutely, you're on the ball here, guys. Mm. It's real, you know. Mm. And that's the brilliant thing about the likes of this heritage park. All the monuments here are original. There's no recreations. It's original. And,
With the exception of the Cronoga, I suppose.
That's one of Denny's creations. Like, so yeah. It's considering because Denny did it now, and considering his age.
It's genuine,
considering his age, you know.
the trout inside in the lake are gone away back 5,000 years ago.
Danny, Stevie, as I said to Pat there a second ago, there are more and more unusual things to be discovered here. Oh, and
sure, I mean, you just don't know, like, but there is a bit of a drawback to here now, you see, because, well, it is an advantage to have the horizon so near all around. Niall Gregory pointed that out to us very early on. If you were in flatland, the horizon could be 40 miles away from.
Yeah.
But here, myself and Stevie, the same difficulty, which are lovely. The whole place here is regenerating now, but we have to keep them in check, some of them. But when we were trying to establish what that was about, but probably moreover over here where there's a standing stone in the saddle of the hill over there about 5 kilometres away, the sun sets there on the equinox twice a year, and there's a gap there now. But back in 99 we were inside in the wood here and we couldn't see that stone. It would be easier explained now maybe if I diagrams, but you see, Frank, next Friday night, if this place is full of people, somebody go up there, they think it'll be great to watch it from above there. But if you go up there, you rise up about 30 feet and the moon will go beyond the stone.
Yeah, yeah. So it is absolutely site specific.
And like Stevie said, this place here seemed to be trunked up with the soil, I suppose, and things like that. If you go down there where I went in 99, you drop 30 feet, and what would happen then is that the moon would past the stone before the show.
Yeah.
And that little tilt is like a seesaw. Yeah. The smallest little tilt will change where the moon or sun will rise because, like Niall said, the horizon is so near.
The majority of today's programme was recorded on the 17th of June. It's now the 21st of June. It's almost 11:30. We're here at the Stone Circle. And we're looking towards the mountain, expecting the moon to rise behind the altar. It doesn't look good, Stevie, does it?
No, Frank, the cloud had thickened there in the last hour. It looked promising an hour ago, but it reminds us a bit of 2006, the last time the same thing happened.
Danny?
We were concentrating tonight, and we had all our chips in the one basket, says you, but like Stevie says, that's the look of the draw, and it didn't happen, but you're right, it's a hell of a long time before it will happen again.
Brendan, there are hundreds of people up here. Danny was cooking great fare there. The bacon tasted great out of the Fulloch Fee, and there's music playing, and there are all sorts of people all interested in what was happening here.
Yeah, there's a very festive atmosphere here tonight, even though the moon hasn't appeared as we were hoping. I think everybody that has come here tonight has enjoyed it, because Danny and Stevie were speaking there on the microphone earlier and kind of explained what was there, and there was an audio-visual earlier up in Molly Galvin's.
Pat, it's now a minute or so before 11:30, and the cloud is clearly too thick. It's not going to happen.
No, Frank, it's not going to happen this evening. But you know what? The important thing is the group of people that are here. The sense of expectation, the excitement, the sense of a connection
going back literally thousands of years, we are assembled here where our ancestors assembled 5,000 years ago. It was a sense of community. It was a sense of we're here to celebrate a hugely important event. You're talking about we were here this morning on the sunrise. We're here this evening to celebrate again the moon and the connections back, like the significance of both the sunrise and the moon to people in Neolithic times when farming was important, when community at a different level was hugely important to people. I think we're celebrating that here again this evening.
It's now 11:30 and the cloud is clearly taken. The mist is even starting a little bit. Did you imagine, Danny, when that discovery in 1999 on the 15th of December that you could have several hundred people here in the middle of the stone circle gathering to witness a continuation of what you started?
Just truly amazing to see such a huge crowd here. Truly amazing. You never in your life think that the whole thing had come around a circle. That's like Stevie said, and there's a ancient cooking place there, and they must have did exactly what we did, like Pat said and Bindi. Yeah. They came here and they feasted and celebrated these events that happened, and it has come up full circle.
And it's now 11:55. It's very definite that the moon isn't going to show tonight, or at least it's not going to show in the kind of area that we want to see it. So we'll go back to the regular programme. We'll pick up the story from there.
It's scenes remembered far and wide by the winding banks of Sheen.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Virgin Media, Ireland's best broadband. Visit virginmedia.ie. It's playtime.
The Saturday Supplement with Frank Lewis on Radio Kerry.
It's scenes remembered far and wide by the winding banks
the
of
the Stone
Sheen.
Age moonrise in Bunnan. This stop is at the Cranog, a Stone Age dwelling on a man-made island in the middle of a pond at the entrance to the Heritage Park, the only replica in the park. Now the need for a story house. Bunnan's archaeological sites and the alignments have very justifiably got a lot of attention. But, Brendan, there are many other aspects of the story of Bunnan and the Sheen Valley.
The archaeology is only one aspect of it, and I think we've touched briefly on the myths as well. But, of course, there's a complete social history of Bunnan and other stories and other literature and old songs and poetry and all that kind of stuff. What we would be hoping here is that, as Danny said there earlier, that we could build a heritage centre here where we could display some of the aspect of the story, indeed about the park, and an interpretation centre for the park. And it would also provide a space where we could have music sessions or story sessions or sing songs or play cards or whatever it would be. And all those are aspects of the story of Bunnan. It would be a great asset to Bunnan if we could get a story house going and an interpretive centre.
How has the focus on the archaeoastronomy affected the image of Bunnan, particularly how Bunnan feels about itself?
I think it's given us a great sense of identity, the fact that our ancestors were active here at least 5,000 years ago. Is roots us in the place. Those of us from Bunnan, and we're all of us here are from Bunnan, born and bred here.
Stephen, through Molly Galvin's, you meet a lot of visitors. Had their image of Bunnan changed before all of this? People would have passed through the area without having any awareness. Maybe they might have known, as Brendan reminded me, the site, the butter rolls, the petrified dairy, as C.S. Lewis called it, yes. Would have been known. But that would have been it, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Pat, Bunnan has become synonymous with the park. There's huge potential for development of the flora and fauna in the area. Farming has moved on. 40 years ago, there was three creamery stands in the parish, like, and people would roll up with their churns or 12 gallon milk and whatever. But this has moved on. The people of Bunnan have a great ability to adapt and to move forward. And Denny's an example of it there, and when he made changes to his style of farming.
Brendan, you've all talked about the need for having this story house with the nature element and the legend element and the archaeology and the history and the folklore and so on. Are there plans prepared? Are you pounding the doors of
the Department of Education in Fáilte Island?
We're hoping to build a heritage centre right here in the park, and preliminary work has been done on that already. We've done surveys there on the sewage and all that, and the water. We've got the water in here from the Bonong Group Water Scheme, and we've investigated the possibility of having sewage facilities here, and we've been in consultation with an architect, and a couple of plans are drawn up, and I think at this stage we're coming to the point where we need to decide on a plan and go for planning. But all this takes time, and it also takes money, and we started approaches to the various funding organisations. It's definitely the hope that we can build a heritage centre, interpretive centre, story house, whatever you want to call it, in the not too distant future.
But in the funding, shouldn't there be a number of agencies involved with it? Not just Fáilte Ireland, but people like the Department of Education, people like the Office of Public Works, people like the Community Development Wing of the Department of Rural Affairs and so on.
Of course, the intention would be that we would approach all those organisations to put a funding package together. The whole thing has to be an integrated plan.
Yeah.
And the feasibility studies that have been done into it is key to that, because you can't approach any government department or any funding agency with just a madcap idea. You have to have something positive in a written format, in a proper report, and we've got funding for that, and that has been done. So it's, the way things operate, that is an essential first step.
And the midges are getting worse.
And the midges are getting worse, yeah.
My particular view of it anyway would be, Frank, that I'll put it this way to you. In 1896... when there was gold found for the first time on a tributary of the Klondike River in the Canadian West Yukon territories not far from the Alaskan border, it sparked off one of the greatest gold rushes of the modern era, where men and women too flocked in their thousands to make their fortune. But you know something? If all the gold that was ever got at the Klondike, if it was all piled up together, its entire net worth wouldn't amount to one hill of beans compared to the value that we've up there.
I agree with you.
What we have here is priceless and irreplaceable, and there's no doubt in my mind, but if we get outside help, one day this valley will be famous.
The whole way in which this kind of thing might be done, Stevie, you're looking at, say, something like the Blasket Centre in Dunquin, where they've used technology so effectively, and where you can get a surface image or a surface element of the story, but if you want more, you can go deeper, or if you want more still, you can go deeper. The technology has changed how this kind of thing might be done dramatically in recent years.
Some of the people that come here wouldn't be able to climb the heights into the park. Yeah. So we need something like that, a centre here, and displays and that technology to show people exactly what's happening.
Over the coming months, you should go, any of you who haven't seen the Blasket Centre in Dunquin, you should go to see it, or indeed the Pierce Centre in Rossmuck, where it's interesting. And again, Dunquin has done part of this as well. I mean, they have not a very large building, but the way the technology is used, you can do it, and you can do it in the kind of way I'm talking about. But also, both of those have a nature element of it, you know, in that they've used the immediate surrounds to tell it this part of the story of nature. And in Rossmuck, they have this quite large structure, not very far from Pierce's cottage, and yet, because the large structure is built in a dip, And the whole area between the two then is the whole nature element in telling your stories. But there are very good examples. They are two of the outstanding examples in the country. And also, both of those would have an educational and a research dimension, not just a tourist dimension. And I think that's hugely important.
Mm-hmm. I was talking to a guy yesterday from across the mountain here in Ballingarry, and they're developing a centre there, all to do with the Irish College. What he was explaining to me, that they will have an audio on that, where there'd be storytellers beside the fire talking to one another. But the most interesting part for me was that you could actually ask the storyteller a question. This is I'd look at the television and I'd ask someone a question on television.
I was amazed when we went to see the Pierce Centre in Rossmuck. Now, not only did it have data, but even, I mean, we had a granddaughter with us who was about, I don't know, 8 or 9 or something at the time, and she spent the whole hour and a half or 2 hours over there in front of one machine, and it was giving you an image and giving you the name of that image in Irish and in English, verbally as well as visually.
Before we go to a break on the 10 o'clock news, 16-year-old Brianna O'Sullivan sings The Winding Banks of Sheen.
Down a pleasant glade one eve I strayed, when the sun had ceased to shine. The birds sang sweetly in the glade, 'twas the early summer time. Yet sad the thoughts that filled my heart as I strolled along the green, of comrades who were forced to part from their homes beside the sheen. Where are those comrades that I knew in the happy days of yore? To the dear old land they bade adieu for an alien distant shore. Yet in their dreams they come again to view the meadows green, to wander down the hawthorn lane by the winding banks of Sheen. It's oft I ponder on boyhood's days, when my heart from care was free, when full of mirth in the wildwood played, as the birds sang on the tree. With tear-dimmed eye I sit and think of that tranquil, happy scene, when I rambled by the pebbly brink, by the winding banks of Sheen. 'Twas there beside the hazel grove we wielded the command, o'er yonder hill our flocks we drove, 'neath the sun's bright rays at dawn. Yet though the sea's old friends divide, their hearts are here, I ween, mid scenes remembered far and wide by the winding banks of Sheen. Alas, some in their youth and bloom in a foreign land were laid. They hope to rest in an Irish tomb, or in the beech tree's shade, by Feakness old and moss-grown walls, where the turf is ever green, that a mother's tear on their graves would fall by the winding banks of Sheen. And some have clung to the dear old sod, for sacred is the home. What joy is theirs round the fireside log, when the evening's work is done? They speak of Ireland's wrongs of old, when the Saxon reigned supreme, when the priest's blood from the mass rock rolled by the winding banks of Sheen. God bless the loved ones far away is a prayer that oft we hear, from tender parents old and grey, who hope their children dear will come again to wander o'er each hill and old boreen, to hear Divahacoon once more by the winding banks of Sheen.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Virgin Media, Ireland's best broadband. Visit virginmedia.ie. It's playtime. The Saturday Supplement with Frank Lewis on Radio Kerry.
Mid scenes remembered far and wide by the winding banks.
Welcome back.
Of Sheen.
In this quest for the Banan Stone Age full moon rise, today's programme was recorded on June the 17th. Your comments on a particular archaeological site, on archaeoastronomy, are Banan for future programmes. Text 083 300 3300, phone 066 71 23666. Email franklewismangerton@gmail.com. Write Frank Lewis, Gillon, Bangerton Road, Muckross, Killarney. We're in the centre of the stone circle in the Banan Heritage Park. Danny, you've told me the story a number of times, but to refresh memory, it was a sunrise, as I've said, Thursday, December the 15th, you told me, of 1999. It was the first day after you had got out of pig farming. You were emptying out the ashes at the back of the house.
It made very severe frost the night before. We got a cracking clear sunrise. First of all, I looked south It was just a fine clear morning, and then I looked west, then I looked north, and then I turned around and I looked east. I couldn't see the disk of the sun from where I was standing, but as I was looking east, didn't it just peep up, and a shaft of light shone over into this 40-year-old forest. And I was looking at it for a while anyway, and like I said, the sun wasn't blinding me because I couldn't see it. I could only see where it was shining. And it was lighting up about an acre or two of the forest. And I knew the time of the year we had. And I said, gee, it is unusual to have a shaft of light be lighting that place there now. And then it crashed my mind into a stone circle there. The parish is crammed full of archaeological sites. I'd be tripping over them since I was a young lad. And there's two very significant monuments in my land. They're Bullan stones. I had a bit of time in my hands, and I came over here about 2 kilometres from my house, and the wood was about 40 years old. And it was a long time since I'd been up here to the stone circle. But I trudged my way up, all the way up. And eventually I arrived at the circle. And there's lots of trees around here now, but at the time, the stone circle was about 60 paces from the border of the wood. So after getting to the stone circle, I walked about 40 paces to the southeast, towards the sun. And I had brought my binoculars, and I went scanning the horizon anyway for some unusual dip or crack in the horizon. I was only searching a few minutes. When I see this square stone here on the horizon.
The one we're looking back at, yeah.
It's only about a kilometre away. I knew it was significant the minute my eyes caught it.
Amazing. But how has that experience at sunrise on that Thursday of December the 15th in 1999, how has that affected your life?
Not much. But I did learn from it that the difference between looking and seeing can be worlds apart.
Stephen, how has that discovery, that experience that Danny had all that time ago in 1999, affected your life?
At the time, we were just after buying property which Molly Gallivan's cottage, which is now Molly Gallivan's cottage and traditional farm. I was researching a stone row on the farm, and I met Danny one night in Glengariff in the local pub, which we used to do that time. He asked me what we intended to do at Molly Gallivan's, and I was sharing my story and telling him about the stone row, and then he told me of his discovery here. Both of us got very interested in the subject. Danny asked me if I'd help him look at maybe other sites in the area. Then, I suppose it became a bit of an obsession. Yeah. Started a series of investigation in what the sites were all about, and there was a computer program, it's called Stellarium, that I was able to get and download on the computer, and that will help you and show you where different sunrise, moonrise, different times of the year. If you're asking me how it affected me, our life, I do my research mainly from 11 o'clock at night till 1 or 2 in the morning. So you might probably ask my wife how it affected.
Pat!
I'm standing on the shoulders of two giants here, Denny and Stephen. They initiated the whole notion of what could be here within the park here. And piece by piece, it was unravelled. I like to think I assisted some little bit in that space. And Niall Gregory, the archaeologist, gave huge support. That inspired me to do a course with UCC in archaeology, and huge learning there. And it again promoted further interest in what we're about, what's around us, the past, where we came from, our people. I enjoy connecting what's around you to the myths and legends associated with the area. Kinmare Bay being famous from the Milesians, supposedly they first came in there. I remember a long-term member of the Kinmare Walking Club, and like at a point in time, we walked to get to the top. That was the ambition, and it still is. Maybe not as fast as we used to, but along the way, we now look for items like, be it a wedge tomb, be it some archaeological item, be it some swirls on the rocks, which actually there's a huge amount of about the place.
Brendan, while living and working in Cork, you still spend most weekends in Bannon. Danny's discovery,
the discovery had an effect on everybody in the parish. I developed a much broader interest in what was around us. I always knew this stone circle was here, and I remember coming up here in 1992 trying to find it to take a photograph of it. Mm-hmm. And it took me several attempts to find it. It was nearly impossible to get a photograph of it at the time because of all the trees and everything else that was around the place. Mm-hmm. But with Danny's discovery, it kind of opened up all the... There's various other sites in the parish, and Danny's discovery showed the interconnection between a lot of those sites. I was also interested in the folklore and the history of the parish and some of the folklore stories that are associated with the various monuments.
Sean?
As a younger person, you're more drawn to the fantastical side of things, but in older years, you could get a different sort of appreciation. You understand a bit more of the complexity of it and what great achievement it was for people to do what they did back then.
Denny's enthusiasm would draw anybody in, but he did a huge amount of research and was slogged. It wasn't just sitting at a computer, it wasn't just sitting at a desk. Denny came up here in all sorts of shapes and forms and wit and to see, right, is this real? I mean, you can't beat any practical research. You can draw lines on a map, but when you're standing here at the stone circle, and as we will on Friday morning on the 21st, and see the sun rising where you expect it to rise. Now, that's not, you might say that's not unusual, but it will take in through the Fulloch Fia, and you'd have to think, right, what are the connections there? What are the connections between the people that built this monument 5,000 years ago and what are we seeing today? The continuation there is absolutely fascinating. That type of thing draws me in very easy.
Danny, just a second on that. I mean, you have no big background in research. You hadn't gone to university and studied anything like this?
No, I hadn't. No, I never went to university. I spent my final days over there across the river. You did? Yeah, 6 months in Kinmare to take.
After primary school, just 6 months at second level. Yeah. This kind of researching thing and going into things in that kind of depth, had you had any background in that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I know, Frank. Sure, you'd come around and investigate. I never even heard the word research there back then. You go around to each monument and you check it out and you'll be wondering, and I'd be driving the tractor here, there and everywhere, and I'd see where the moon had rise and it was a significant date, or the sun. Earlier on, the watching and the looking, and anyone that's interested in any archaeological monuments or stone circles anywhere in the country, for that matter. If you don't find the observation point, you'll never get them to come together. This place was full of archaeological monuments, and there's 5 Balan stones here. And if anyone asked me prior to 1999, is there any pattern to them or anything, I'd tell them, for want of a simpler explanation, I said they must have fallen out of an aeroplane. You couldn't make head or tail of them. When you stand here at the right time, everything comes together.
Right place at the right time, with the right weather.
Oh, that's crucial, yeah. We were often disappointed with the weather.
Brendan, I suppose the kind of point that Danny has been making there is an observation that could be made on almost any aspect of our story, isn't it? The story of the place. It really is a fascinating example of what you can do with what is on your doorstep.
Exactly. There's a lot of stuff everywhere. We just are blind to it. We just walk on or drive on or cycle on and we don't really see what's in front of our eyes. And as Danny said, you look at things but you don't see it. And it's the seeing what's there. And that, I think, has been the crucial part of all this, that the interest that Danny generated there meant that people brought forward other observations that they'd made or other things, and we got information about monuments that we wouldn't have known about previously. And as Pat said there earlier as well, in the walking club now, if we're out walking, we're always on the lookout for something unusual, and that's...
Adds hugely to the walk, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Makes a walk much, much more interesting. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back in a minute.
It's scenes remembered far and wide by the winding banks of Sheen.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Virgin Media, Ireland's best broadband. Visit virginmedia.ie. It's playtime.
Experience. Experience the Football Championship quarter-finals doubleheader this Sunday at Croke Park with Donegal v Louth at 1:15 p.m. and Kerry v Derry at 3:15 p.m. The GAA Football All-Ireland Senior Championship. Experience the unforgettable. Sponsored by Allianz, AIB and Supervalue. Advanced ticket sales only at GAA.ie or selected centre and Supervalue stores. GAA,
where we all belong.
Charge into summer with TUI. Secure your holiday today with savings for families and adults flying from Dublin, Cork and Shannon. Holiday sorted. TUI, live happy.
A mixture of sunny spells, scattered showers, temperatures between 5 and 25 degrees, mild to gale force wind. Hail? It's anyone's guess. Whatever the weather, Sentra has you covered. Fanta and Sprite, 2 litre any 2 for 3.50 plus deposit. Select Tato Occasions or O'Donnell Sharing Crisps, €2 each. Plus Heineken 20 bottle pack, €25. Sentra. Live every day. Enjoy call sensibly.
Take a trip to Sneem this July and make the most of all the stunning surroundings it has to offer. With an overnight stay at the Sneem Hotel, base yourself in one of our luxurious double rooms or book the family into a self-catering apartment or the exclusive Golden's Cove Lodge. Then take in the scenery and festivities of the Sneem Summer Festival or a great night of music with Rebel Hearts on July 20th. The options are yours to explore this July at sneemhotel.com.
The Saturday Supplement with Frank Lewis on Radio Kerry.
It seems remembered far and wide by the winding banks.
On the evening of Friday the 21st of June, visitors gathering at the Stone Circle in the Bonan Heritage Park to witness the moonrise over the altar. And a tasting experience cooked in the nearby Fullocht Fia, the cooking pit. And in fact, we've moved all of 100 feet to the Fullocht Fia just here. Danny, have archaeological digs revealed what kind of food was cooked at the Fullocht Fia?
Deer, I suppose, and wild pig. I don't know of any more now, but I suppose they'd eat whatever they could get if they were hungry, wouldn't they? The Sheen River wasn't far away.
Salmon. Yeah. Are there particular ways of cooking in a Fullocht Fia that get better results?
No, I haven't an awful lot of experience, but once the meat is boiled well, that's about it, and it tastes lovely. We wrap it in cotton, of course, and in the inside, and then straw on the outside, just to have a proper effect. I'll be doing it here now on Friday.
We're standing at the Fullocht Fia. From your observation, is there any legendary or archaeological evidence of this kind of happening? Celebrations, eating, drinking and more at archaeological sites? This Stone Circle?
Revered like a church, I'd say. Back at 5,000 years ago, they worshipped the sun.
Do you think there was cooking here connected to any event there?
There would have, of course, been. They'd have eaten as well.
Danny, did all of this interest in archaeological alignments affect what your wife did in her spare time?
Oh, Maria, she was around exploring things with us as well. Back home, I said we have a Bolan stone. Maria discovered an alignment there. It's the Southern Cross. To have an alignment, for somebody that mightn't understand, you need two fixed points. If you don't have two fixed points on the landscape, the sun or moon can rise anywhere.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You need two fixed points. Yeah. Over there, you're standing at the circle, which is a fixed point in the landscape, and there's a marker on the horizon.
But Myra had to join in on all this activity.
Oh, she was at helping, of course. Yeah.
Did her interest continue, or
it's a very unusual thing here. It comes alive. You can look at anything, and it's just an object, a bridge or standing stone or something, but this comes alive.
The experience is a living one and a changing one.
Yeah.
I mean, how many alignments have you now? Even on that map in 2003, you had quite a few.
Seven, I think.
Yeah. Stevie, spare time activity for your wife. Any changes as a result of all of this?
Frances don't have too many spare moments, I'm afraid. But she'd have a great interest in when we'd come for a walk here or whatever, you know, in the park, or we also like mountain walking, especially in the winter time. Again, discovering and looking at different sites along the way.
Do people come up here and picnic?
We have seating areas around here. They can picnic right around. Very rarely you get any remains left after. They're very good to tidy up. It's very interesting when you see what they would have done is heated the stones in a fire and then dropped them into the Fullocht Fia, into the water, and that would have heated the water and cooked the meat, and it's a very efficient way
How long does it take?
It's much like boiling a piece of bacon or venison or whatever.
So the water would stay boiling?
It would stay boiling once you can keep adding the...
Or you're adding the stones.
Adding the water. Yeah. Danny mentioned there about the Fullocht Fia, but I think it's right on the alignment. You have the sun rising here on the 21st of June. straight in between the two entrance stones of the circle, and then right on that alignment, straight in front of it here, is your Fulloch Fee. So it's, of course, was a place of ritual and cooking.
Brendan, that interest in archaeoastronomy, did that change what your better half did in her free time?
I wouldn't think so, Frank.
Would you not? She has a definite line in free time.
Oh, she's a definite line in her own. She has her own interests outside of that. But she would be quite interested in the park as such.
Yeah.
But she wouldn't have done any research in it or anything like that.
Pat? The interesting thing about Fulloch Fee, and there's been quite a number of them, as you know, excavated along various roads, or new roads that have been created. While people think the Fulloch Fee cooking only, that's not the full story of the Fulloch Fee. Like, there was evidence found of dyeing clothes in the Fulloch Fee, quite possibly used for bathing.
So you're cooking your kind of,
well, maybe not in the same Fulloch Fee, Frank, because interestingly enough, there was another tree fell over just about 200 metres from us here, and evidence of another Fulloch Fee was there. If I remember correctly, it was during the creation of a roadway in Waterford, they found a Fulloch Fee every about 200 metres.
So you think that they were different Fulloch Fee for different purposes?
The evidence would strongly suggest that. And this particular one, while it may have been used for cooking, I suspect the ritual purposes on the 21st would have gone beyond mere cooking. You know, you consider that you have the moonrise significant from here, equally the sunrise. So this particular Fulloch Fee would have been in use. And the archaeologists suggest, by virtue of the height of the horseshoe shape around it, that gives an indication of the amount of continued use. And the archaeologists suggest you're talking about 300 or 400 years of continued use of this particular one here.
Why does the height suggest that?
As you drop the stones into the water, little shards will crack off by virtue of a hot stone hitting cold water.
Of course.
If you dug in, and that's just anybody should, if you dug into the side of that mound there, you'd find little shards blackened. It's little blackened shards. In other words, like, you move them from the fire, of course, the stone is black, drop it into the water, cracks off, and then you have to clean it out every so often because it'll fill up. And what you put it conveniently around you.
Yeah, yeah.
And it also creates the space. So Fulloch Fees are a whole fascinating subject in their own right. I think it was students in UCG that decided that they could make beer in a Fulloch Fee, and they did succeed, and students would.
Yeah. I would think it would be hard to imagine that they would be having feasting and celebrations if there weren't some kind of drink being imbibed at the same time.
Pat, how your wife's social activity might have changed as a result of all of this archaeoastronomy?
Her hobbies are quite specific to herself, and that being said, of course, she has a huge interest in what's happening within the park. This would have added to her range of interests. Everybody, I think, that grew up in this area would have an interest in the history and the stories and what have you, but it got more specific, it got more interesting when we found the monuments, when we did the research, and of course Tina's interest would have picked up by virtue of that, you know, and she'd be passionate about the area and to make sure that the whole sense of community that we're fostering will continue into the future. And really, it's about that as it is about anything else. Well, it is very, the specifics are very, very interesting. The history is interesting, the mythology and the folklore. But it's about continuing a sense of community in the parish and maintaining that. And what Stephen said earlier, our ambition to build a heritage centre. Our intention would not be to build a tarmac road up here either, because I think to take from somewhat, you need to get into the space, you need to get into the nature that's here. And if you look around you, as Denny said earlier, the forest is regenerating, and our ambition in there would be to coppice this out over time, and that will bring back the butterflies, the moths, all the wildlife that, and again, that's an aspect that over the next 10 or 15 years I would see growing. There's 37 acres here, like, you know, it's a great opportunity.
Obvious one to add here. If it weren't for all of this, Sean, it would be easy for a Bannan or a place like Bannan to literally disappear as a separate identity.
There would have been a massive population in Bannan here at one point in time, pre-famine anyway, certainly. But as you said already, and it's something that is, it gives a great sense of an area, a great sense of history and connection to the past, so it's been quite an important thing for the community in that sense, I think.
And now, Bannan musicians Damien Barry on Boron, Nick Irwin on Bazooki, and Mary Donegan on Tin Whistle, with two reels, The Walls of Limerick and Crowley's Reel.
Mm-hmm. Plus Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry. Brought to you by Virgin Media, Ireland's best broadband. Visit virginmedia.ie. It's playtime.
The Saturday Supplement with Frank Lewis on Radio Kerry.
Mid scenes remembered far and wide by the winding banks of Sheen.
We're in Bonon to learn about the Bonon Stone Age moonrise. Today's programme was recorded on June the 17th. Your comments on a particular archaeological site, archaeoastronomy, or on Bonon itself for future programmes, text 083 300 3300 or 4066 712366. Now, other ancient sites in the world known to be associated with the major standstill of the moon. Stephen, Bonon, one of only a few ancient sites in the world where the major standstill of the moon is marked.
Stonehenge in England, and that's only after being discovered recently. Callanish in Scotland, and the island of Lewis. There, the stone circle, you're looking out onto a mountain. It's called the Sleeping Beauty because the mountain is on the shape of a person or a woman lying in her back. We have probably much the same here, where we're looking up at the mountain, and the mountain is shaped like, again, a person on their back. I call it the Unbeyond Morrow, the dead woman. The other site then is in America, Chimney Rock in Colorado.
Siobhan and I visited Stonehenge on Midsummer's Day and still remember the procession of druids, all dressed in white, on their great banner, only one word, Cordus, camping with, I think it was one-year-old Ida and two-year-old Irla and five-year-old Brendan. It was an amazing experience. Stephen, the effect this interest in archaeoastronomy has had on the people of Bonon, on this whole community?
Going back to when it was discovered, and maybe some people were sceptical of it at the start, but people in general were very interested in it. And
from early on?
From early on, yeah. And then when the Heritage Park was opened here...
How did that happen?
Again, we're standing where the stone circle is here, and then there are six other archaeological sites in this area here.
How soon did you become aware of all of those?
Probably within maybe 1 or 2 years. We done a walk throughout the park. Connie Murphy, Lord Mercenham from Castletown, he was an archaeologist. He gave us a great help as well. I remember we walked right around the park, and of course it was in forestry that time, so it was easy to see the sites, or you know, pick up on the sites. So then the community council came together and decided, let's look at the possibility of opening this up for locals and visitors alike.
It's a big undertaking though for a small community.
A big undertaking, but we have a great working community here, you know, a great working community, and the people came again, all the we sold shares in the community. I'd say 99% of the people bought shares for €1, but just that everyone is trying to encourage everyone to be involved with it. Mm-hmm. Then subsequently we had the land rented here originally from Quilte, and then it was purchased.
It was a man just over the hill here sold this in 1960. There was a lot of abandoned farms around the country that and Quilte decided to give local employment to farmers. I know 4 neighbours that planted this by hand. 5 actually. The man that owned this sold it for, how much do you think, an acre in 1960 or so? An acre now, I mean.
Yeah.
£3.
£3. £3 an acre.
Yeah.
Gosh, in 1960.
Yeah. And when we were buying it in... we signed the purchase contract in December, Christmas 12. We were negotiating with Quilter prior to that, and they wanted €140,000, but we negotiated them down to €80,000. And we had €20,000 made, and we put that in against the €80,000, and we borrowed €60,000. And we repaid for everybody's fiver, the entrance fee.
It must have been a great feeling for you to see the community coming together and you know, buying and opening a place like this and running it now for how many years?
It was discovered in 1999. The park was opened in 2002. We took possession of it and we put in the paths, and it was officially opened in 2006 by John O'Donoghue, the Minister
for... I was here that day, yeah.
Oh, you were here?
Yeah.
In 2006.
Yeah.
It was opened since 2002.
Yeah. Fantastic. The Callanish Stone Circle with Siobhan cycling around the island of Lewis. According to one tradition, the Callanish stones were petrified giants who wouldn't convert to Christianity in the 17th century, the people of Lewis, were calling the stones Fir Vrege, the false men. Another legend is that early in midsummer morning, an entity known as the Shining One walks the length of the avenue. He's coming heralded by the call of the cuckoo. Cailleac Beara has kind of overtones there, Stevie, hasn't it?
In Scotland, I think you have the Cailleac Buir. Here we have the Cailleac Beara. The whole Beara Peninsula we're standing on right now is named after this great goddess. Again, the shape of the mountain, it could be seen as the Cailleac Beara. Just to the left here, at the head of the woman, that's called Fáil na Céim,
Cliff of the Steppers,
yeah, Cliff of the Jump. Yeah. And again, if you were here going back 5,000 years plus, Orion would have stepped off the great stepped off the cliff there. Yeah, yeah. So probably all to do with that mythology. Yeah.
Brendan, the effect on Bannán people and their place.
They had seen it for themselves before that. We had been explaining what was going on, and it arose an interest, and everybody got interested in it. When the committee decided to launch a co-op to buy the land, they sold shares in the community, and Danny said earlier, virtually everybody contributed. The shares were sold for €1 each, but obviously people paid a lot more than €1, just contributed a lot more than that. And there was local fundraising as well. On the day of the official opening, I think there was up to 800 people here. There was a huge number of people here. And, you know, there was just a huge enthusiasm for the whole thing. Apart from the archaeology in the place, it's a great recreation area where people come to walk and just hear the cuckoo. There are a couple of hares in the park and the wildlife and everything else. So a lot of people just use it for recreation purposes.
Is it open all the time?
Oh, it's open all year round, yeah. It's open all year round, yeah.
And how many hours in the day?
It's open 24/7, I suppose, really. Yeah, 24/7 for anybody. Yeah. We were talking earlier about the preparations for the moon stand sale. I remember being here last year, quite late in the night with Stevie and Danny, and we were hoping to see where the moon was progressing towards the major standstill. Unfortunately, the clouds came down at the last moment, so all we got was skelps taken out by the midges. But there's things going on here all the time. I mean, there's observation going on all the time and new discoveries being made. And
it's just as well that the community has had a buy-in, because can you imagine the kind of reaction they would have had to see me coming out in the middle of the night, probably on a raining night? And there could have been strange stories, couldn't there?
Oh, well, they should have. There could be, but should it's harmless enough, really, you know?
As it is. Danny, the impact that all of this has had on Bannán and all of the people here, was there a particular experience that surprised you in all of this?
The biggest surprise was what we had. There's no doubt about it. And it's right in front of our eyes, in plain view, and nobody had seen it.
But isn't it true, as I said to you earlier, isn't it true of every aspect of our story, whether it's legend or landscape or flora or fauna or archaeology or history or folklore?
Yeah.
You know, there are so many dimensions we don't see.
That's true, yeah, sure. Everyone said we'll go away, the grass is greener on the other side, but they hadn't checked me out maybe where they were. Yeah. It's amazing what's right under your eyes and we don't see it.
Absolutely. Stevie, was there that reaction? Both the reaction of the people here and the effect it's had on. What do you think is the most profound effect all of this has had on Bannán and the people here?
Again, it has definitely helped in the whole sense of community, keeping the people interested, keeping people together. If it's only for a meeting, probably once every couple of weeks or once a month, to organise another piece to the jigsaw, or it's a meeting thing.
New dimensions all the time.
Yeah, and we've agreed.
What's the challenge now?
It is hoped to build a heritage centre here. That's probably the biggest challenge, and I suppose enhance what we have and showcase the great heritage that we have here, you know.
So the Bannán story house. Brendan.
Yes, hopefully a story house is. There's lots of stories in Bannán, apart from the archaeology. I mean, we have loads of myths and legends here and all that kind of stuff, and it would provide a basis for doing that.
Sean, what do people of your generation think that the effect of all of this has had on you and you collectively are on your place?
Just listening to what Stephen is saying there, I think it's that sense that actually has the effect of bringing people together and having a sense of community around something which is as fascinating as this.
It bonds people more. Because in a place like this, it would be very easy to be sucked into Kenmare or...
Absolutely,
Kenmare, Glengariff being regarded and Bannon being forgotten.
Absolutely, and that kind of a sense of pride that there's something important in your underneath your feet, literally.
Tremendous. We're going to move on, topic-wise anyway.
Mid scenes remembered far and wide by the winding banks of Sheen.
The Saturday Supplement on Radio Kerry, brought to you by Virgin Media, Ireland's best broadband. Visit virginmedia.ie. It's playtime.
The Saturday Supplement with Frank Lewis on Radio Kerry.
Mid scenes remembered far and wide by the winding banks of
Sheen. At the time of the major Stone Age moon standstill, we're in Bannon. Pat?
To my mind, all the time, it's about community. It's about a sense of community. It's about a sense of place. It's about a sense of history. It's about a sense of where we've come from. Our place, our people, what our people did. The people who started into the farming space there in the Neolithic era, they've left the biggest mark on the landscape, as indeed followed on by the people in the Bronze Age with a copper mine not far away. And if you consider copper that was mined here, there's been evidence of being used in Germany for tool making and weapon making. If you want to make bronze, the nearest place for bronze was over in Cornwall. You had to go, you know, it's your turn to go for the bucket of tin.
The kind of things you like to do when you're not working, did all of the interest in archaeological alignments change that?
My primary pastime previous to getting seriously involved in the whole archaeological area was hill walking. And as mentioned earlier, even within the hill walking scene, it has developed into, as you walk in the lower reaches of an area, well, what are we looking at here? Yeah. What's the stones, the cup marks? And higher up then, what you find is a huge amount of the wedge tombs, which would have been the last major megalithic tombs across Europe. And we have a profusion of them here in the southwest. And many that we'd come across would not be on the archaeological survey.
Danny, I spend most of my time rambling around the parish, checking animals and things like that, and sheep, and checking fences. And I have my eye open, like Pat says there, wherever I'm travelling. If there's new ground, I just keep my eyes open, see whether I see anything else.
So you don't have Myra coming after you and saying that, did you check those cows in the upper field and forget these archaeological sites?
Sometimes, Father.
Stevie?
When our family bought Molly Gallivan's, and that seemed to coincide with the discovery of the stone row and leading on to my talk with Denny. We have so much history and giving guided tours. We're meeting lovely people every day from all over the world and sharing with him our history and our heritage. And
Brendan, living and working in Cork, has what you do on your weekends in Bannon changed?
It has. I have a great interest in the archaeology, and we'd spend a lot of time here in the park. We use it to come here for a walk. You see the wildlife around the place, and you hear the cuckoo in the spring. It's one of the first places you'll hear the cuckoo.
Sean, you grew up with it all.
Having this growing up, for me, it would have informed a lot of, let's say, like the hill walking that I would have done with my father, and indeed on my own. You're more keeping an eye out for that, what's in the area that you're roaming through.
Danny, has there been a change? I mean, were there a lot more people interested in football or fishing?
There were definitely fishing, and Shin River was good.
Are you talking about legal fishing, you are?
Any kind. There's some amazing songs about it. Get ready, boys, get ready, for the time is drawing near. Fetch your nets and mend your meshes, see there is no gaps between. This loose those finny creatures of the Rookty and the Sheehan. You may boast of beef and mutton, turkey ham and chicken breast, or the cheese from out the Gaelty that would put hair upon her chin.
But give me 1 hour's poaching along the River Sheen to drive salmon drunk and crazy by the Rookty and the Sheen.
When you think of our poor fathers who were forced to leave the land for just looking in the river with a pitchfork in their hand, it was hard and cruel to blame them when they dug the bannockian that sent salmon drunk and crazy. Now the landlord's gone forever, said indeed it is his fate. Off they gloated o'er evictions when the rent was 2 days late. Now we'll catch their fish and salmon and label fast by to Billingsgate by the porters of the Sheen.
Bindi's point there, people mightn't have a clue what bannockian is. It's probably an Irish name for a plant that grows along by the riverbank. And yeah. if you crack it, yeah. it's a bit like kind of a, yeah. crack it, milk.
Yeah.
Something very similar to milk would come out of that. You slash it for the water to be flowing into the upper, into the pool.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be long anymore when we'd have plenty for our dinner.
Is there, as a result of all of the interest in archaeological alignments, is there less interest in other aspects of the story of Annan or other kind of social things?
In fact, it would be the opposite. It has increased the awareness of Annan as an entity, as a place. And even while Sean was talking there, like you asked him, how did it impact? One of the things that I noticed, and he might have been reluctant to say, that it sparked an interest in the old Irish songs. If you talk nice to him now, he might sing one for you later.
Good.
Just, and again, the type of stuff that he's honed into would be connections with the land, connection with place, connection with the past.
Mm.
So, like, in the overall sense, I think that has increased the awareness there. And even when we did the dugout boat here in the park, which I think you covered previously, mm. Frank, the naming of the boat, we ran a competition in the local national school to, like, who came up with the best name, and then who came up with the best artwork and what have you. But again, that created a huge buzz within a new generation. And then talk about they then, hopefully, the majority will think of us in their place, the community, the whole community of Annan, and how it reflects. And even in the travel to whatever, Australia, they look around and maybe appreciate whatever cultures they come across there.
Their new place. Yeah.
Just one little story about the poaching.
You were big into this, Danny.
If you had more than one, there was no fridges or anything, so you'd share them around with your neighbour and vice versa. What happened in the same thing would happen when they'd be killing a pig. You'd share out the meat because there was no fridges. But this guy, anyway, he caught a few fish and he gave one of them to a neighbour of his. And he wasn't a very young man at the time. The man he gave the fish to, anyway, was examining him. He was a pretty keen eye on the fish as well. Gee, he said, there's no marking him, how do you catch him? I have one net, I have no. He said, I caught him all right. And your man clapped it anyway, of course, that it was probably the bonny keen.
Yeah.
And he was kind of reluctant himself, maybe he had his own, but he gave him the fish anyway, and he told him cook him straight away. The guy that gave him the fish, like I said, he was reluctant to eat him. But he waited until the older guy had the fish ate
yeah.
before he ate his own. See, that was before laboratories or anything.
Sean, after that sort of introduction, you better sing that song.
Sinindira me feine ganoras do vich machoni chostev nalon vi bohoni nukom hene gaun sfunogi I gaunde sfad vich an banya tevagon an banya goran saurig aluna gauna na gaua na bona alu na gauna be the barlum alu na gauna madan taurig na gauna madan taurig eg dosar na bonta Fighter dum sakana agus fighter dum burach is fighter dum sechin agring machweduktor kjolta si na krinave a hir her inclusa bavin shalom sagenav na moig chakt kon bula Allu na gauna, na gaua na bona. Allu na gauna be the barlum. Allu na gauna gyalla bona, na gauna madan taurig. Eg dausar na bonta.
they've been on archaeological sites and their alignments with sun and moon and the way they've been taken on board by the people of Bannon. Visiting the Bannon Heritage Park, its archaeological sites and their story is hugely interesting, educational and enjoyable. Funding the development of the Bannon Story House will reward a hundredfold for the local community and multiples of that for the tourist industry. Take note, Fáilte Ireland, South Kerry Development Partnership, Kerry County Council, the Department of Education, the Department of Rural and Community Development, and so on and so on. Special thanks and congratulations to Danny O'Connor, Stephen O'Sullivan, Pat O'Sullivan, Brendan O'Sullivan and Sean O'Sullivan, our singers Brianne O'Sullivan and Sophie O'Shea, and our musicians Damien Deborah, Nick Irwin and Mary Donegan. On today's programme, location, sound and programme coordination Siobhan Lewis, post-production Colette Foley. For me, Frank Lewis, until the last Saturday in July, the 27th, when we'll mark 60 years of the opening of Muckross House to the public, with Genny Guilleman, Niall O'Donoghue, Director General of the National Parks and Wildlife Service, on two new Muckross 60 Nature Scholarships. Donald Hickey of the Muckross Trustees on their major initiative on traditional Irish dance and music. Conservation Ranger Mary Sheehan on tackling rhododendron and deer numbers. Paul Morgan on the Muckross Trust Craft Workers Shop and Restaurant. The Trustees Conservator and Bookbinder Paul Curtis on unusual clients and commissions. Conservation Ranger Tricia Beecher on knowing and caring for the lakes. The Trustees work over the years with Marcus Tracy. And at the end of August the 31st, we'll walk Barna Bog with stories, music and song. On the history and folklore of the bog with Anne Murphy, Cathy Murphy, Bertie O'Leary, Joan Reardon, Margaret O'Leary, Morris Cronin, Kathleen O'Callaghan, all from the Trustees Community Group and its subcommittee Tureen Cahill Storied Kerry. Until then, June and July swim till you die in sea and lake where you're safe and hopefully we will be dry and warm. Thanks for your company. Francis Jones will be with you after the news. And now at the end of the programme, before we go to a break in the 11 o'clock news, to sing us out Sophie O'Shea with As I Leave Behind Nadine.
As I leave behind Nadine, it's like purple splashed on green. My soul is strangely fed through the winding hills ahead. And she plays a melody on wind and streams for me. Won't you remember? Won't you remember? Won't you remember me? And we wind and climb and fall like the greatest waltz of all. Float across the floor, her sweet breath outside the door. And it's time that I was gone, across the silver tear. Won't you remember? Won't you remember? Won't you remember me? Won't you remember? Won't you remember? Won't you remember me? As I leave behind Nadine in the hall where we have been, rhododendrons in your hair, in the mountain-scented air, I still feel her spirit song across the silver tear. Won't you remember? Won't you remember? Won't you remember me? Won't you remember? Won't you remember? Won't you remember me?